said, what do we do? Because it's my personal belief, and free to agree without me, but I think we as a board, and this I think is probably true in a lot of groups, we tend to focus on the day-to-day operation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A board's job is really to not figure out what we're doing today, but what are we doing tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And I think we just, as and we hear it all the time, and I think it's not just in community theater, it's just everywhere. We don't think enough time about saying, what do we want for tomorrow?
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
Oh, and away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the Arts and Business of Community Theater, presented by the Monroe Community Players, and featuring us, the Green Room Groupies. Each episode, we discuss issues relevant to the operation of a successful theater and how to produce the highest quality shows for your audience. Sometimes we slip into other topics as well, and you understand how Green Room conversations sometimes go. I'm David Ford, the de facto leader. I mispronounced my own name. I'm David War.
Sure.
The de facto leader of our little band, and looking around the green room today, I see
Robert Yeoman,
Carol Slifka,
Kathleen McBee,
Ron Roberts,
and Brian Burchett Ross is not with us, but fear not, we do have another bright new face and very young face, relatively speaking. Introduce yourself, Mark. Welcome to the green room.
Thank you. I am Mark Thornton, and I was early today.
Yes, he was.
Thank you.
And he'll be coming up with those great insights as we go along there. So.
Welcome, welcome.
But welcome, welcome, Mark. Mark, as I said, he's one of he's a young man, but he's not youth. But he'll add a slightly different, hopefully a slightly different.
A new perspective?
Perspective, thank you. I'm too old. I don't remember words anymore.
What is a ute?
What's a ute? Did you say ute? Are you a ute?
Yeah, it's a potato.
So today, though, we've gathered as usual, hopefully to give you some good insights and things like that that we'll talk about. But before we go too much further, Kathleen has been traveling, and I think and she tried to reach out to one of our groupies out there. I don't think it was entirely successful, but she did pay a little visit to another theater just to plant our flag in Tennessee.
Yes, in Morristown, Tennessee, the Morristown Actors Guild is who I visited. I did not get to meet anyone from the Guild. Their show actually went up the same time we were doing Still Magnolias.
Yeah.
So it was after Still Magnolias that I traveled to Morristown to visit my in-laws and got to go to the Rose Center for the Performing Arts, which is a converted school from the 1920s, 30s. I obviously didn't take good notes. But they have dance, they have music, they have theater, they have a huge theater group. That's where the Morristown Actors Guilds perform. So I got to meet Sally Johnson, who gave me a tour of the facility.
Excellent.
And see where they performed. They hold about 250 seats. When they do perform, nice lighting, and they actually have to build a thrust because it's one of those old school stages which is kind of tucked back. So whenever they perform, they have to build the thrust and take it back down.
Oh,
so,
really?
So it would have been interesting to actually talk to some. They had just finished The Foreigner.
Yes.
I believe is what. And I really would have liked to have seen that performance, but I didn't get to.
It's a great show, actually.
Huh? Yeah, but shout out. I was there. Sorry I missed you and loved your little town and the theater and all the best. We hope we hear more from you.
Yep. So, Buck, we were down there, saw where you're at. Thank you for being out there. And I think it's Ken, but he goes by Buck, is what I understand. So shout out to you again. Thank you for being out there and supporting the Green Room. And we'd love to have you listening. And we're just so folks, yep, tell us where you are. And you never know, one of us might drop by.
I'll be sure to give you some pictures, Dave. You can put on our
Facebook page
as proof. I was there.
So that's exciting. So good. I'm glad you got a chance to see there. And I understand you go down to that area fairly frequently. Mm-hmm. So there's still, maybe you'll get to see a show at some point down there.
And that
there
is
as well.
My plan. I'm going to be following and watching. So hopefully next time in October.
Yep.
So, yeah, give me a shout out what you're doing in October, and I will try and coordinate my schedule.
Excellent. We will have a review for a show later on in this episode. This time, though, not from Kathleen, but from yours truly. I did get down to the Village Players of Toledo. They go by the Village Players, but they're in Toledo, and I want to emphasize that because there's a lot of village groups call themselves the Village Players from what I found. So this is the one that's in on Upton Street in Toledo. They did Amelie, and I'll be reviewing that to see whether your group should consider doing the show or not. We'll do that after our discussion today. Wanted to share some other interesting information because, as we know, a couple episodes ago we had our 75th. We talked about, you know, the growing groupie nation and how we're excited that we're trying to, we got that one goal of trying to get someone from every state. I've looked in some of our stats and I was surprised and happy to find out that we have a Canadian following.
Oh,
yeah, second to the following that we have in the United States. So, which is understandable.
Happy Canada Day for those who celebrate.
That's right.
Canada Day.
That's when this is being recorded, so on July 1st. So thank you, Ron, right there. That means fireworks in Detroit soon, too. So, but we're so I was very pleased just because it's kind of exciting. Oddly, I would say, you know, it's not unusual, but you would expect it. But we do, mostly the English-speaking countries are where we're getting some of our listeners from. The United Kingdom was up there as well as Australia. Not talking a lot of people, you know, in the terms of overseas, but there are people out there listening. I believe I even saw Morocco.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fancy.
You didn't know how big we were, Mark, yeah. Did you?
No, I had no idea.
We're working on our global reach now, yeah. But the United States and Canada. So
no pressure, Mark. Yeah. Quit sweating.
So I don't know, you know, if it's Canada just across the lake or river from us in Windsor, or if it's Toronto, or Quebec, or out in Vancouver. But we're happy to have you guys along with us. And you know, we'll have to start saying for the love of theater in North America and the world. So we'll go from there. So that's exciting. But speaking of things, so and that, like I say, this is one of the dreams and one of the things we talked about is, you know, to build this podcast to hopefully become a valuable resource for a lot of people across the country, if not across the globe. But let's talk a little about visions, and not in the sense of spiritual. Carol looks like she's having one now. But in terms of personal hopes and goals and how they translate theatrically. So who wants to share a vision of what they would like yet to accomplish in theater?
Go ahead.
And this is you as a person now.
Yeah, as a person. Well, of course, I keep hearing and I keep getting pushed to direct. And I think my vision for myself or my growth, the one that we always have is to get better. We always want to get better than our last performance, but to get the confidence and find the show that I'm passionate enough about to take that step into directing would be one of the things on my list ahead.
On your bucket list, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Mark?
I didn't. I was like, your
personal
goals.
You missed the homework?
I got the homework, but I'm like, oh, for the group, that sounds fantastic. But for personal, what? One of the things that I honestly thought was really, would be really nice to do is have, get paid for like an acting gig. Like just an acting gig to get paid for a theater. Because I've gotten them like at a few parties. I got asked to play Joker like 15 years ago, but it wasn't like an actual performance. They're like, hey, can you go act crazy in downtown Ipsy? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. And you're going to pay me $50? Sure.
Oh, my gosh.
But for an actual show, I think that would be a nice goal to do.
Mm.
So,
I would like to expand a little bit into other theaters. I would like to be able to walk into an audition somewhere and get a part in another theater, someplace like the Toledo Rep or Croswell or, you know, God forbid, Purple Rose or something like that. The problem I run into is that there's not a whole lot out there available for a non-singing, non-dancing woman of a certain age. So unless, you know, there's a role for somebody's crazy grandmother out there or great-grandmother, I'm pretty much SOL, so.
But they're out there.
But they are, yeah. So, and, you know, and one that works with my timeline, too. There's been a couple of things that have come up that I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I'm going to be here, there, whatever. So that's what I would like to do. I would also like to, there's a show I'd really like to bring to the Monroe Community Players. And I'm really afraid to make commitment on it. I'm afraid to take the final step for it because I'm afraid I won't be able to cast it. Mm. So, you know, that's something that's in the back of my head, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would like to go to a bigger venue. I have worked on a movie, a feature film. So, yes.
Fancy.
Fancy. And I did get paid.
Well,
it's a shame that you had to leave the legitimate theater and bastardize yourself like that.
Yes. And unfortunately, none of my scenes made it to the final cut. But it was a really interesting process to go through anyway to see how an actual big real life movie is made.
It is a fascinating
and
process.
I touched a famous person, which was in an appropriate way. So that was the highlight of it.
And now you have your own restraining order
yes,
on the wall.
Yes, I do.
Framed in with a spotlight on it.
Yeah. I've gotten kicked out of some pretty cool places, and so I was just expecting it. But I did get kicked out of that one, but yes. So that's my thing, is directing this one particular play I'd like to do and moving into a bigger theater, just once.
Yeah, Ron, what are you...
as far as roles, because that's kind of where I took this, and maybe I misinterpreted the instructions, but...
roles are good.
Okay. Really the only one that's left that I really would love to do before it all, I get called, the curtain call in the sky, is Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman. Mm. And I'm sitting across from somebody who did that role phenomenally, and Bob did, and I could hope that I could do it as well as you. But that's really the only role that I have left that I would like to take. And then my second goal, and this, I'm going to give a shout out to one of our original Groupie Nation listeners, Corey. And I'll butcher your last name, so I won't say it. But my goal is to get on stage with her at some point. Oh. I've been involved with two shows with her, one as assistant director and one as a stage manager. Well, actually, assistant director for both. But anyways, I just think that it would be a lot of fun to be on stage with her. So that's also one of my bucket lists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. Sometimes it's just being able to act with someone else that you admire, mm-hmm. And their talents and stuff. So
I didn't even think about that. Now you got me thinking all my answers.
See, there you go.
So it's interesting how other people's input is starting to rechange what you're thinking about. Bob, what do you still have out there?
To be cast.
You've done almost anything. So
yeah. To be cast in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Floor Forum, and actually make it through the entire run of the show without heart problems. If not, then Gomez and Adam's Family.
Oh, Gomez. And like you guys, and like you, Carol, I understand. You reach a certain point, it's like, what roles are left? Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm doing Paul from Barefoot in the Park anymore. Though I think my looks have held up.
You could probably pull off Daddy Warbucks, though.
So. At least one
What's
more time.
What's the name of that show?
I've only done it twice, and I think you got to go for the trifecta. Yeah. But that's the thing. And then sometimes there's roles that it's just like, I just don't have the energy to do that anymore. How many times can you run across on the stage?
You know, we mentioned Daddy Warbucks, and we have a lot of fun with it. But I think what you should do, Dave, is the next time there is an Annie somewhere, that you should be FDR. And pass the torch to the next Daddy Warbucks.
I wonder what happened to the FDR wheelchair after Jim passed.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yes, but I think that's a good idea. I'd be happy to pass on the torch to another daddy of my choosing.
I was going to say, if I'm directing. I will be Daddy Warbucks, and then you said to another daddy of my choosing, I'm like, maybe not.
Daddy Warbucks, and let me clarify, Daddy Warbucks of my choosing. I've got a feeling this is the episode David gets into trouble. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. And I'm at a point, too, with the community theater that, frankly, I've a lot of my goals now aren't even so much for myself. But it's for things like the podcast and for the group as well. I keep thinking, what show do I really want to direct? What show, I feel that, I kind of did my swan song with Mary Poppins, and it's like everything else, and I've played Prospero and The Tempest, and it's like, what really is left? I'd say King Lear, but boy, Bill Bill out there, he just did such a wonderful job. It's like I just pale. Dr. McCluskey, if you're listening, I still have fond memories of that time we worked together on that show. Some not so fond, but that was more personal than anything that's happening on the stage. But that's the thing. So that kind of leads into the next level. It's like, okay, so that's what we set it ourselves. So you kind of have an idea. Do any of you have vision boards or whatever that you're trying to do to put those up? No.
I have a web board that I use for all my ideas. Like, I just start writing a bunch of like random things and circle them, then like tie it and how they all connect it like a crazy person. Uh-huh. And then I actually officially like find like, this is actually what I want to do. I just thought that was interesting when you said that.
So kind of with that is kind of just kind of gets your brains kind of working. What would you like to see happen with Monroe Community Players? When the day is done, when someone says, hey, Community Players, guess what? Good news. We've accomplished our mission. What does the group look like at that point? There's nothing left to do in theater. Monroe Community Players has done it all. What does that end group look like to you? Do you ever think about that?
Well, I personally would like to see more younger people start getting involved into the theater and bringing in some new ideas in terms of scripts and something that is more of a group project. I mean, every play is a group project, mm-hmm. but I would like to see more people get involved. I think one of the things that holds me back from really charging full force into another directing gig is that there's so much you have to do. It's a lot of work. And if there was a bigger community to kind of share some of that work, that would make it so much easier. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would like to see. And again, I'm really glad that Mark is getting a lot more involved, and I think that more people, younger people coming in, would really change the dynamics of it.
Mm. No.
That's my thing.
Mine kind of piggybacks right on. My very first one was foster more volunteerism, which is getting more people involved. I think we should have a goal with each show to have at least two new people involved. And that means if you don't cast new people, you find ways to mentor new people, either front of the house, back of the house, lights, promotions, costumes. Yeah. I mean, look for ways to involve other people, and maybe in a mentoring way, because sometimes people just want to be asked. They don't know what they, and they're scared, about trying something new or coming into a new group where they don't know everybody. If they know one person, and then one person says, hey, could you help me? And this, it could open a whole new.
Okay. So what I'm hearing so far is when the day is done and Players has completed everything, we've left a group that has a diverse volunteer base of all ages, and they are skilled in several different tasks, and there's a process in place where they have been mentored by somebody older to bring in somebody newer and to make sure that none of these jobs have fallen through the cracks.
The knowledge passes on,
continue to pass on.
And that's something that I want to stress, because I appreciate, when I'm new, and I was new for, I've been on and off with Players, but the past 2 years I've been more active with you guys, and one of the things that I love is just learning from everybody, from all of you guys has been phenomenal and fantastic. And so you need that. That's kind of one of my visions, is like a mini tangent, if you will. So I apologize if we don't do those.
We're all about tangents, Mark.
Yes. It's a small room. We all heard it.
Oh, man. But it's one of those things where, and this is what I love, and this was a good example is for one of the shows I did. I honestly don't even remember which one, but I had we had some marketing. We wanted to try some new ideas, and so I sat with Dave here. I sat with a different Corey, not the one Ron was mentioning. Right. But I sat with a different Corey, and it was amazing how he had a person that's younger than me, and then me who's middle aged. And then Dave, who has all this knowledge and is beautifully looking 45.
I say, you're only middle-aged if you plan to die at 60, I think.
Yeah.
I think you've got a few more years.
You're still middle-aged, right. And,
no, I'm past it. You, say, you're not middle-aged
yet. Oh, okay, good.
Yes,
I'm still young.
Yeah.
This is how it all ends. Yeah. So. Yeah.
You've got a good 5 to 10 years before you're middle-aged.
Yeah. Definitions need to be made here.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is it was really freaking cool because you have all of these different perspectives working on the one common goal. And I think if you want to reach that, we did everything, which in my head is there's always ways for improvement and things we could do better. So in my head, it's like, are we continuously improving? That's kind of my, we did it because we're always finding new ways to improve.
Okay. Ron?
Not going to lie. So what I'm going to say here is what I would love for the group to do is for everyone to not be afraid to find someone who is better than you. And I don't necessarily mean acting wise, but in anything. You can't be afraid that if somebody walks through that door and they are maybe the best light person you have ever seen in your entire life and they know more than you do, be okay with that. Because in the end, it's going to help everyone. I think Dave has used the phrase, rising tides raise all ships, correct? Yeah. And I think that we, as human beings in general, we struggle with that. We don't like to be told that maybe somebody knows more than us, even though we all know it's true. And I think from a theater community, especially community theater standpoint, you have to understand that, you know, just because you did lights, or I'm going to use lights for an example here. Say you've done lights for the group for 25 years, and somebody else comes in and says, hey, well, what about doing it this way? You have to be comfortable enough to know, okay, well, let's see. Let's talk about this. Let's try it out and see if it works. And then if it works, hey, well, what else do you know? What else maybe? Do you have other people that maybe you know? And so I think that as that's a challenge for us, and it's probably a challenge for every organization, is you have to be accepting of new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So far, I think we have a diverse group of people who are of very ages. They know how to mentor. They know how to encourage new talent. They aren't afraid to take on new things and to learn new things. And they basically that we would be a source of theatrical knowledge and learning new experiences well into our middle ages, as Mark might say.
That's not what I... Never mind.
Okay, Bob, you look pensive.
Oh, sorry. I was trying
to... Wake up, Bob.
Oh, okay.
It's your turn then.
All right. What I would suggest is what Croswell did with the Farfel Bar... It's a little bar right in front of the theater.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Barrels?
Yep, something like that.
I can't remember the name.
It begins with an F.
Favre, I think it's some F-A-V-R-E, maybe?
Anyways, it's a space where, number one, if you enjoy theater and music and musical, there's a place to go. That they don't even have to come see your show. They'll go to the bar. Mm. Because if that's one thing, if that's accepting... is people in a bar and someone saying, hey, remember this song? It starts playing a song, and you just get swept up into it.
Yeah.
It is the most welcoming spot, which leads to having more people join us.
Farvers?
Farvers, thank you. Wonderful place.
Give them a shout out there.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. And so that's so again, I think that also is kind of alluding to other funding sources. So again, welcoming more people in, trying with different variety of techniques, diversity, age diversity, not being afraid to try new things. It's interesting. Nobody said to me what I thought would be the obvious things to pop up, because my things are like when Players is done, it'll be a group that has its own facility.
Mm. Oh.
Capable of doing multiple different types of shows in different venues with with hundreds, if not thousands, of subscribers that come enjoy those plays through the community every year. But going along with the well knowledgeable volunteer staff who enjoy participating in the theater of all ages, and a place where, of course, everyone is welcome. So that's what we just did here, though, in microcosm, kind of move us along to our top thing, was a visioning exercise. Something where we sat down and we said, what do we do? Because it's my personal belief, and free to agree without me, but I think we as a board, and this I think is probably true in a lot of groups, we tend to focus on the day-to-day operation. A board's job is really to not figure out what we're doing today, but what are we doing tomorrow? And I think we just, as and we hear it all the time, and I think it's not just in community theater, it's just everywhere, we don't think enough time about thinking, what do we want for tomorrow? And I also think people tend to get vision and mission statements confused. A vision is what we want to be. A mission is how we're going to get there. So the mission of players might be to put on good shows. How are we going to get there? You know, okay, we're putting on good shows. Is that, you know, does that play into the vision? Is it going to help us get to where we want to be with, you know, having more, a larger venue, having more volunteers and stuff? So the mission should feed into the vision, not the other way around. And I think a lot of people get that, from what I've seen at work and other places, I think people get those backwards. The vision is the guiding light, you know, the candle on the hill, or a candle on the water, as Helen Reddy might have said back in the 70s, saying. But, you know, that's a thing. So I think it's important that I think we as, and, you know, I don't know what you guys think, but I think it's something that I know Monroe Community Players probably, sorry, Brian, you're not here to defend it. but it's probably something we just don't find the time to do. And it's probably the most important thing any group can do. I think we have evidence, and I won't mention any names, of groups that frankly are floundering in our area. And you got to wonder if some of it's because they don't have that clear vision. Here's what we want to be. They have kind of this broad, here's, you know, big idea, but have they narrowed down to this is what it's going to look like when we've succeeded.
Well, I think that really takes a lot of good leadership, too, to bring all the diverse ideas, visions, and get them pointed in one direction.
Yeah.
You know, that's a challenge in any organization.
And I would think, maybe this is a bold statement, for me, we'll see if anyone else thinks it is. We as a group tend to focus, again, because we're so focused on the day-to-day, we don't attract people to our board that are the bigger thinkers sometimes. You know, we may get people on the board who know how to put on a show, but do they know how to visualize and create a dream?
And that can mean changing. Yeah. And groups don't like change.
Is scary.
And again, even to the point, I think, and I bet there's some people out there that can tell me this is true, I think some of the larger groups, their boards never even get involved with selecting a season.
Right.
They don't care about the director's stuff. They've hired somebody to take care of that. They're saying, here's what we're going to go for next. You know, this is, you know, we're going to build this new 2,000-seat auditorium.
Well, and those boards are more about financing or finding funders, right?
It's about setting that vision and going forward with it, and bringing in people who can help articulate the vision. As we started our conversation early, you know, one idea sparks another idea, sparks another idea. I don't think visions are something you should do, and, you know, it's in private. It's okay for one person to come through and say, I have it, you know, like being like John Kennedy, or Martin Luther King, I have a dream. John Kennedy was more.
Not what your country can do.
Kennedy was more the don't ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. But Martin, you know, I have a dream, and I think it's about setting I have a dream, or as Mama Rose said, I have a dream, baby. That's now the title of the episode should make more sense to you if you're stuck with us this long.
It's interesting that you said that, because it's like when we're kids, you can be anything you want to be, Jimmy. And it's like, all right, how do I get there? You can be anything you want to be, Jimmy. Yeah. And it's like, excuse me.
We moved on to the next kid.
Yeah, we move on to the next kid.
You're damaged goods now. You actually become aware that
Yes, anybody can be president, but it ain't going to happen.
Ain't going to be you.
Yeah. No, and there's no shame in that.
And a board needs to be flexible. Mm. They need to be able to say, hey, we have this vision, but, you know, that's we're not getting there following this path.
Right.
You know, be willing to change a path, even if they meet the obstacles of the old membership saying, nope, we never did it that way, and that's not the way we do things around here.
That's the weird part, because I get, like, you said, Kathleen, earlier, how some people, like, get afraid of change. They don't want to change. They don't like change. That's where the excitement comes in, mm-hmm. because there's so many possibilities with new people coming in, or just people, someone comes in with a random idea that you just, like, want to go with. Like, it's, I think that's the exciting part, is because you can change for the better, and when you have all those opinions and those different thoughts together. Like you said, though, I will agree, especially at where I work, it takes really good leadership to have that, but also when we have really good leadership and everyone wants to attack that common goal, you're going to accomplish so much, because when everyone has that clear common goal and everyone understands it and ways to go, it doesn't matter. We can all, like, talk and have disagreements and arguments, but at the end of the day, what's best for MCP? How can we move forward for it? And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, and with a common goal that everybody can see how they can contribute to it.
Yep.
You know, that's very powerful. Never underestimate a like-minded group all marching to the same drum, mm-hmm. what they can accomplish.
Yep.
So let me ask you this. So you had made a comment that our board in particular, not this particular board, but just a board in general for MCP, that we're more focused on the day-to-day rather than creating the vision or the dream. Is that a byproduct of, I'm going to put a little laundry out here for everybody, is where things were not good. And this was before COVID. I mean, there were some serious conversations that were had by the board about whether or not we were going to make it. Is it, do you think that a byproduct of those conversations and that possibility is what drives this board or boards in general to be like, okay, we need to just focus on how are we going to get to Monday instead of, or, you know, how are we going to get to 2 years from now? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a byproduct of that?
I would think so. I think, yeah, we're probably still seeing the effects of COVID. I mean, we certainly know why. That's also one of the reasons a lot of groups are struggling right now, is they never really got back on their feet after the audiences dried up.
But they had 7 aerials come in audition. The parents don't see that the group is struggling. We need help financially, time-wise. Become part of the group, an active part of the group. But all they're interested in is, I bought this wig for my daughter, and you're darn well going to be doing Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm.
Cool. You just brought up a really good question I want to ask as well. Why do you think, if there has been, and I don't know, so this is a new question for me, if there has been a drop in participation like before COVID and now there's barely any, what's the main reason for that?
Well, I don't know. Well, and we, just to be clear, in community players, I think we're starting to see, essentially, we're kind of in a renaissance. Our audiences have come back. We changed things during COVID, and we changed venues, and we changed quite a bit. But the audience says, yep, we appreciate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And they're coming back. And it's a different audience.
Yes.
So I would say that the groups that are still seeing a drop in audience, maybe because they haven't made that changed, just figured out, because I think COVID opened up a lot of people's eyes to what they really found important. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, theater, rightly or wrongly, wasn't high on that list.
Right.
It was more about, it started, what we call it, you know, nesting together, trying to get together with their families more on different levels. And then frankly, you know, between the lures of social media, gaming, you know, there's more ways to entertain yourself in your living room now than there's ever been.
Well, I think we've seen a transition, Carol. If before, as we got going, most of the people, when they'd raise their hand and, who's been here before, it was the majority, the audience, it was their first time. And now we've started to get to that shift where it's like 50-50, which means we've got people that are coming back, you know, but we're still bringing new people in.
So. Yeah, and we're happy to add more seats.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like everyone else, we have that flexibility in our space to do that.
And I think don't be so quick to say, you know, oh well, COVID's over, and you know, there are a lot of people just now coming out of the COVID mindset. I know I see it all the time at my other job where people will say, I haven't been here in years since before COVID, and now we just decided to come back. I hear that several times a day.
Yeah.
We haven't been here since before COVID, and now we're back. So I think that's part of it, too, is that people are starting to feel the draw to get back out into participating in society and looking at getting back to the things that they enjoyed before. So I would say we're still in a transition area, and I think it's going to be stronger than ever.
Yeah, I wonder. I can't remember who I was talking to, probably my sister or something, where I said, I want to talk about another group. I said, I kind of wonder if it's a pendulum. Mm-hmm. We swung so far in one direction, now it's going to swing the other way and maybe even overcorrect itself before we get back to that middle ground that made everybody kind of comfortable.
I think what really turned it around for us and our group is when we hit it hard. I mean, we didn't just do a season with four shows. I mean, we were putting something up every month. We were burning out people, but we kept pushing forward because we knew if we didn't get over that hump, if we didn't start really pulling our audience in and bringing in the funds that we needed as well, we weren't going to be around. So, I mean, I applaud the board at that time, which said something every month. Mm-hmm. You know, Reader's Theater, anything, trying new things to bring new people in, to bring an audience in, and to get some momentum. The hardest thing is to get something that stopped moving.
If I can build on Bob's comment, you know, which essentially was people want to come and participate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're only doing four shows a year, you're not. That's only four opportunities to get them to participate. Mm-hmm. If you're doing 12, that's three times as many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if each show is smaller per se,
right? Mm-hmm.
You've still got more opportunities to get out and get to those people.
Yeah.
You know, that's arithmetic, I think.
But I do. Wow, must be sitting over here. It's the Brian spot. But anyway, yeah.
Well, it's a squeaky chair.
Or the chair. Yeah. And we talk about participation, and everybody wants to be on stage. Everybody wants to be the star of the show. And I know we've covered this before, but as a group, and I think we do a fairly nice job of it, you need to make the support staff feel important.
Yes.
And make them understand that every participation is important. Now, obviously, the people who are acting, they're going to get the laurels. Everybody's going to love them. But, you know, doesn't matter how good you are on stage unless you have people there to support that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another opportunity for organizations is to make sure that your support staff feels appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure that your light tech knows that their work is appreciated. Make sure that the front of the house people are appreciated. Make sure your stage manager and your stage crew all understand that they are integral and that, you know, just because you don't get cast on a show doesn't mean that you can't participate and be a very big piece.
Spoken like a person that's been backstage quite a bit now on a few shows there.
Yeah, it's
Ron,
opened my eyes, I gotta say.
You took my, that's normally my spiel, but I see you've drank the Kool-Aid and you're on my side now.
It's true.
I remember watching you change all those sets and what was it? Time Stand Still?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, he's feeling it now.
Good times.
Any time on stage is a good time, whether you're whether you're dressed in black or whether you're in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, that killed it.
Period.
Well, on that note, and just kind of looking at the time, why don't we go to our review? And normally this is where I'd say, hey, Kathleen, but I beat her to the punch this time and actually went to see a show. As I said, I went to see Amelie, and I hope that I'm pronouncing that correctly. It is a French show, and it's based on a 2001 movie, which was also French. It was filmed in 2001's critically acclaimed Jean-Pierre Jeunet. I can't say it properly, I'm sure. I failed French in college. Sorry. Wrote and directed it. Like I said, won many awards internationally. It was nominated for Academy Awards in the U.S., but did not win, from what I could tell. This movie, which was basically the story of a girl who wants to make the world better through little acts of kindness, I guess is the way to put it. She starts out with a tragic beginning. A father who thinks she has heart disease, a mother who dies early in a pretty horrific way, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody. Even it's kind of shown on stage, but it's not. But she decides on the death of Princess Diana, she makes a discovery in her apartment because of the shock of it. She can basically kind of drop something in, discovers a hidden compartment filled with toys from left over from a little boy. So she makes it her mission to go find the man now and to return them to him. And when she finally does that, she sees how happy he is. So it's like, oh, I can do this and make other people happy. And then, of course, eventually the play goes on and she keeps on making people happy and ends up in a good place herself. There's interesting plot lines. To me, it felt... So the play felt kind of like a Wes Anderson film, if that makes sense to anybody there. It was kind of quirky, but it makes sense. I did not see the movie myself. Bob had seen the movie, I think, and I think you agreed with my assessment.
Oh,
yeah. It was just kind of very stylistic and kind of quirky.
Yes, stylistic, quirky, definitely. But one part of it is it's not a musical, but music is extremely important to the film. As it broadcasts the emotion that you are going to be feeling once you hear that music. Yeah. And it mats perfectly in with the actress, who is just fantastic. Yeah. Barely saying more than 10 words in the entire film.
And that carries through in the play. So basically in 2017, it opened on Broadway in March of 2017, and it closed in May of 2017. It did not make a big splash on the Great White Way. This was after a couple of couple years of development and everything. It did, however, there have been productions in London, Germany, Australia. And I believe it is still, and obviously it's still out there because I just saw it at the Village Players down in Toledo. And so the question still comes up as usual, is like, is this a show your group should consider doing? I would say yes, with certain caveats. One, this is very much an ensemble piece. In fact, I'm not even going to mention individuals in this show because the quality of acting was so tight, you know, that everybody had to play their part and they knew how to do it very precision-wise. There was really no one that I would consider the star except the young woman playing Amelie herself, the title character. In fact, they reflected that in their curtain call. Pretty much everybody came out, then she came out, they took a bow. They did some things that were kind of interesting that I don't know, I haven't read the script for this show. I don't know if they were part of it and it's what they instructed or if they decided they took the movie for some inspiration. There was an animation with this fly. Apparently the movie starts with a fly and we see the fly's viewpoint of starting the day until fly meets an untimely end, as flies often do. Well, they actually had an animation that they put against the back wall, a projection. And you kind of watch this fly do things while the actors then came out and tried to help that along. The movie, like Bob says, music is important in the movie. It is a musical, and almost every line in this musical is sung. Wow. So that's the caveat. You need strong singers. You need beautiful voices. And you need not only strong soloists, but soloists who know how to blend with the ensemble when necessary. Almost everyone has a moment in the spotlight, but they all knew when to get back together and act as an ensemble. So you didn't always have, you know, the one tenor who's always out singing everybody because I'm the star kind of thing. Everyone, you have to have a group that knows how to work together. I happen to know someone who was in this play, and he had, frankly, I ended up going to it because he was so enthusiastic about the rehearsal process. He said they had great fun putting this together, which I think is always number one. If you're not having fun, why are we doing it? Those of you who haven't been to the Village Players, they have it's a renovated church, I believe. They said it's now their own. They've taken the chapel and made it their own temple of theater. in the street, it's beautiful. I'd say seats a couple hundred. Nice size stage. It's good equipment. Everything. They have a very good tech staff. They did wonderful things with the lighting and in the relatively limited space of their stage. and I'll have a picture that I can post up on Facebook, but they did some interesting things with the set that I think was considered. There's a photo booth that plays heavily into the storyline at a certain point, because she runs into a man, catches her eye, and he's been collecting albums of photos that were discarded at a photo booth, and it kind of leads to this little mystery. Well, that photo booth wasn't just a photo booth. It would pull out from the rest of the set, turn around, and become apartment doors. You would turn it around, and they did kind of magic trick kind of thing, you know. So as they're turning it, they're swapping people out. So the new person comes to the door of the apartment she visits at some point. They move it aside, and her apartment was back there. I didn't realize that stage was as deep as it was until suddenly there's her apartment, too. And the set was designed in such a way so it kind of had the subway feel until they put other stuff in front of it. Then it became a cafe. You know, the usual that you see in musicals where one set really does a lot of multiple things. So there's a lot of moving parts in this play. I don't know how many are dictated by the script and how many their scene designer just came up with, but they did a wonderful job. They had a couple puppets in it to represent young Amelie because the actress is a young woman, so they didn't have to double cast a child as well. And there's a gnome, a garden gnome that ends up traveling around the world. It is, especially when they take the biggest guy in the cast and they put a little gnome bodysuit on him to dance and to sing about his travels. And I'm moving my arms. I wish you could see it, folks, to explain what I'm talking about.
No, you're not missing anything. So,
yeah. Not necessary. No.
It's a wonderful dance. It's a great dance. But my
understanding, it's not
from the program. My understanding is they designed those puppets themselves, and they were very good. The show has a little bit of everything. It has some special effects. It has some puppets. It has very little dancing, actually. It has a lot of choreographed movement, but not what I would necessarily call dancing, in the sense, you know, there wasn't a single kick line to be seen. Oh. And because it's French, even though the musical, I believe, was done in the United States first, by a U.S. lyricist, musical, you know, the librato was done by someone from the U.S., it still has that French feel. Oh. You know, it felt Parisian, and it all takes place in modern Paris. So I would recommend it, taking a look at it, even though it did not do well on Broadway. It's a wonderful ensemble piece that, you know, so as we're talking about visions and building community, here's one that might do it.
And big the cast?
Fortunately, I don't have the program in front of me, but I'd say probably at least 20.
Wow.
And if it wasn't 20, they sure made it feel like 20, so that's good. Maybe 15. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, when they stood in the line at the end, they went from end to end of the stage. But I'd have to count it up. But like I say, they did a nice, just that ensemble work. This really is an ensemble play, even though the title character is there. And the title character didn't have as, you know, it's not like she has all the lines. She probably has a majority of them if you went through and count them, but she basically is there. I could see, if the script allows this, you could probably cast it with fewer people. You know, it appeared to me that they decided to, because even with this ensemble, there were people who played more than one part. And I think you could do it that way but you still kind of want that crowd feel. But I think you could cast it with a few people playing a lot of parts.
Interesting. It sounded like a lot of set changes. Were they pretty fast?
A lot of set changes, seamless from top to bottom, because, again, it was all done open curtain. It wasn't, you know, change occurred right in front of you, and it was basically the ensemble singing, and while they're singing, people are taking things away, and when they're done singing, we're back in a new place. Oh.
So the second act wasn't 20 minutes too long?
It was.
Some things never change.
Some things never change. But it did not feel like 20 minutes too long, but the entire show runs about 2.5 hours, minus the intermission.
That's a long one.
At least it started at, I believe, 8 o'clock, and we were out of there by 10:30. So that's with intermissions, 2.5 hours or so.
One intermission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the first act and second act are it felt like the intermission was pretty much right in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, when I didn't really look at my watch constantly. There was one moment I was frightened, literally jumped out of my seat kind of thing. And that's because I'd be used to these old tricks by now, but they chose to have one of the actors, he's pasting up flyers for a reason that I won't go into because I don't want to spoil the entire story, but he came from behind and suddenly someone shoving something at me. It's like, what's happening there? he got me, which wasn't the intention. It was to add another dimension to the play. So if I were to speak to the director directly, it's like, I'm not sure how important that was, but I know exactly why the director did it, because that got a lot more attention of this key character coming in and doing what he was doing, as opposed to just kind of crossing the stage where you might have missed it.
Mm. Mm. Interesting.
Cool. Yeah. So I think it's a show that people should look at, and because I got a feeling it's probably not being done a lot.
Maybe risky.
Well, and again, that goes back to earlier conversations we've had. Do you do new things or do you do old things?
And who do you have the passion for?
Yeah, but like I say, it appeared to me, from what I could see, a very good ensemble piece, very good for building community, very good for showing off talents of what you have. Mm-hmm. And like I say, and it was an engaging story, if a few minutes too long. And that's only because my butt gets tired. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I have a hard time standing up for the end because I'm stiff from sitting there too long. I got to loosen up.
Some of us older folks. Yeah. Now, the nice thing, though, is this is, it's a very comfortable renovation that they did. Nice bathrooms were easily accessible. They have a concession stand off the one side, ticket stand to the other. It was all very well laid out. I've been to the Village Players before, though frankly probably not before COVID. I think they as a group had that vision, and I'm curious to see where their next vision takes them.
Yeah.
Because I would almost say, based on what they're doing in terms of the show and what they are doing, what they have done with their physical plant, I think they've kind of achieved their mission. They're doing exactly what they need to be doing.
Mm.
So, which I could say about a lot of groups, but I was just impressed. The only thing they could really improve is their parking situation.
Oh yeah. Yeah, been there.
Yeah, they're in the middle of town. It's tough.
Yeah.
They aren't downtown, but they're close enough there. It's interesting, they call themselves the Village Players, but they're in the shadow of Toledo Hospital. So it's like you can look out their front door and see this 12-story tower.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much of a village feel anymore.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there it is. So, like I say, good show. I think one that everyone should probably take a look at and consider. It would be difficult to put on just because of the requirements. I mean, people need to know what they're doing, but it's a good way to show off your cast and the talent you have in your group.
Yeah. And you don't need to know French to...
You do not need to know. Okay. There are some French phrases in there, if I remember correctly, but...
Mon Dieu!
But and they
baguette.
did choose to do everything with a French accent.
Ooh.
I didn't have a chance to talk to the director or why they decided to do that. The actor I knew mentioned that they had done that. I don't think it detracted, but I'm not 100% sure it was necessary. But I'm a big fan of if this show is taking place in Paris, nobody in Paris thinks they have a French accent.
Mm.
They just talk. It's like we don't think we have a Midwestern accent. We just have normal accent, right?
Right.
And I gotta believe everybody thinks that wherever they're from. It's like, well, they all sound normal, so why would our... I think they're doing it just for our... They were doing it for the audience's sake to feel that... Make it, we'll do a
Here
French
you
accent.
Are.
Right now, don't you feel like you're in? No, you are in France now, eh?
Mm.
But I don't know if that was 100% necessary.
Yeah.
You almost just pulled a Canadian accent there as well.
The Quebec.
Like, we're in France, eh?
Hey.
Hey. Yeah. Well, Quebec,
Yeah.
I was trying to say the Quebec. What do they have? The French way to say Quebec?
I.
One of our listeners from Canada, this is a good time to go to our Facebook page and to say, okay, David, here's how you pronounce words. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I know about Canadian accents is A and a boot.
And a boot. Boot. And a lot of unnecessary U's in their words. Mm-hmm. They feel they're necessary, but where the United States has taken them out, Canada chose to leave them from the United Kingdom.
So. I wonder if that raised any question mark with the Disney Corporation for the wonderful world of Couleur.
We will never know.
The world will never know.
Well, and on that note, folks, it looks like we are about out of time for this episode. So once again, I'd like to thank each and every one of you out there for listening and for staying with us through our what sounded like an internal conversation, but I hope was showing you know, what you might be able to do with your boards. We appreciate the support that you not only give us, but that you do give to your communities in keeping theater alive. We also appreciate feedback and conversation from you, so be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun. And fun is always open to interpretation. But I try and put pictures in there, and you'll be among the first, if not the first, to know when a new episode is dropped, by the way, which we do approximately 2 times a month. We appreciate your feedback, conversation. Be sure to visit, like I said, our Facebook. We have an Instagram page now, Green Room Groupies. Emails may be sent to mcppodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org, and keep up with the latest shows and activities of the Monroe Community Players, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. As I said, we generally release 2 episodes a month, so take a moment to subscribe, like, rate, whatever, help spread the word that we are here. You know, help you are integral in our goal to hear from all 50 states, all the provinces of Canada, and all the ships at sea. The Art and Business Community Theater is presented by Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe County Library's Ellis Branch Podcast Studio, which is overlooking the historic River Raisin in Monroe, Michigan, and distributed with the assistance of MPACT, Monroe Public Access. So once again, for the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you
in the green room.